evening and welcome to Right Now with Ann Vandersteel. 60 minutes of hard-hitting headline news, all signal and zero noise. Tonight, Joe Biden impeachment. What are we missing? Should we be looking somewhere else? Is this all a big distraction? And of course, last night in Stuart, Florida, Liberty Defenders had yours truly and Mel Kay come out and speak to an incredible group of MAGA patriots in Martin County. We're going to share some of that with you. And Ryan Heath, an attorney extraordinary with the Gavel Project. Could he be the saving grace to the Carrie Lake campaign? All this and more brought to you by Ann123.com. If you go to Ann123.com, your satellite phone store supplier will provide you with a free Inmarsat satellite phone while supplies last, in addition to backup batteries, battery supplies, solar power backups, and more. By the way, they are sending us off with Starlink and 10 push-to-talk satellite radios for Operation Burning Edge. All this as well brought to you by Ann123. We'll be right back with more commercials from our friends at Brighteon.
Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one while they're still available.
Freedom of speech is a basic human right that has been hard-won and granted to all law-abiding Americans. As such, we should not take our freedom of speech and expression for granted. This is more important now than ever before, since world governments and the mainstream media often try to suppress those whose opinions differ from the so-called official narrative. Here at FrideyOnStore.com, we are dedicated to fighting for every American's right to speak their mind without the fear of censorship or suppression. That's why every purchase you make at FrideyOnStore.com supports our pro-liberty video sharing platform, Frideyon.com, so we can keep bringing you all the latest unrestricted videos mainstream media doesn't want you to see. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at RideOnStore.com today.
And good evening. Speaker McCarthy ordering impeachment inquiry into Joe Biden as he faces a potential motion to vacate by Representative Matt Gaetz. That's right. They really wanted to get rid of the speaker if he didn't get up and do his job. Using the weak Pelosi precedent of impeachment inquiry first, vote second, as House Republicans have uncovered serious and credible allegations into President Biden's conduct, a culture of corruption. Well, Jim Jordan explains the Biden's culture of corruption much better than Speaker McCarthy ever could.
Four key facts, four central facts that are at the heart of this issue. The first is Hunter Biden was put on the Burisma board. Second, he was put on that board with no qualifications. Third, Burisma asked him, can you weigh in with D.C. to relieve the pressure we're under from the prosecution, from the prosecutor here in Ukraine? And fourth, Joe Biden did just that. He leveraged our tax money to get the prosecutor fired. And that fourth fact is validation of what the confidential human source said in the 1023 form. So that is what is central to this case. And then you got all the other facts surrounding it, the emails, the dinners, the phone calls, the meetings, the 5,000 times he used the pseudonym and all that stuff. But those four central facts are really what this is about. And that's why the speaker has said we're moving to this phase of our constitutional duty to do oversight of the executive branch.
And don't forget, 10% for the big guy. But is all that a distraction from what we really should be paying attention to? The House returns this past week to a big spending fight. That's right, a looming deadline to prevent a government shutdown. The Senate has already returned from its recess. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has praised his colleagues from both sides of the aisle for working together on spending compromises without much heartburn, he says. Lower chambers is a different story. Most of what is expected is to be a fierce fight over government spending taking place in the House. And while government funding technically expires September 30th, the House has just 11 working days to pass a short-term funding extension called a continuing resolution. This will buy lawmakers more time to hash out the details of a spending package. The House Freedom Caucus has drawn hard lines even before the House comes back into session, openly threatening to leverage a shutdown if a continuing resolution does not include deep spending cuts or other demands such as more security on top of the southern border. Gee, you think? Yes, the demands of the House Freedom Caucus members have next to no chance of passing the Democrat-controlled Senate. Schumer has warned lawmakers last week that negotiations should be held in good faith and with bipartisanship in mind. Of course, Senator Chuck Schumer is whining like a little boy whose mommy's cutting his allowance off for bad behavior. He most certainly does not want a government shutdown as we are rolling into campaign season. But how did we get here? Into all of this big government public-private partnership enslavement where the people have given up their rights for a corporate cabal led by demons out of the World Economic Forum and Committee of 300? Well, last night, Mel Kay and I spoke to a staunchly conservative America First group known as the Liberty Defenders in Stuart, Florida. Mel sets up the global perspective.
What I really believe is happening to our nation, and we can go from there. I am somebody who believes that there is a globalist movement, that our country is captured by what I call the globalist billionaire oligarchy. And they have captured all of our politicians from the local level. The problem is they started local about 25 to 30 years ago, if not right after World War II. I don't know if everyone is familiar with something called Operation Paperclip, but this was an entry. It is a real thing that happened where the United States, really under the guise of a man who decided that he was basically the aristocracy of America and the head of this country named David Rockefeller, and the crown. And at that time, they divided the most subversive and powerful and smartest Nazis that survived or that they had survived and traded between Russia and America, and we got about 1,800 of them. And these are hardcore communists that then were placed in a lot of our institutions. Most of you know about Wernher von Braun. Well, he wasn't alone, and he ran NASA, and he was a straight-up Nazi. And a lot of technology, but certainly they infiltrated academia here. They infiltrated Hollywood. They infiltrated a lot of our institutions, a lot of our NGOs and philanthropies that you think are for good were never for good. They were always for a globalist one-world government. Now, of course, through the years, this came up. All of us were aware when George Bush Sr. walked on the floor of the United Nations and said, we were going to have a new world order under him,
yes.
and that new world order would be run by the United Nations. Well, everyone stood there and clapped and thought, wow, that sounds great. We're all going to hold hands as a globalist, you know, society. Well, that is a lie because it was not started by him. It was actually, again, started way before him, but if you're not aware, David Rockefeller funded the United Nations after the League of Nations failed, rightly so. But David Rockefeller at the same time also funded the Council of Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, infiltrated all of medicine through the medical schools, Big Pharma through, obviously, he was an oil guy, so that too, and also our education system. So the same people also were responsible for the first coup in America, which was called the creation of the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is a private bank that is not owned by we the people. And unfortunately, we pay a lot of our interest on our $34 trillion debt, most of it to the private Western Central Bank, known as the Fed. and that money does not get put back into our country. In fact, it goes all the way up a funnel to the top, a bank called the Bank of International Settlements, that is somehow is a vassal state similar to Washington, D.C. in Switzerland, but it is also an opaque institution where all money in the planet, basically, since the IMF and World Bank were established also by Rockefeller and his friends, all money ends up at the Bank of International Settlements. And that is also the bank that is paid for, in my estimation, every war, both sides. So we are in a situation where, starting a long time ago, we've been greatly deceived by people within our country. Now, when people call that a conspiracy theory, anyone that's calling it that's probably in on it, okay? And it is my belief that the coup that we are in now really started in November of 1963. The murder of JFK was the beginning of this coup. And the coup has been a cover-up for the last 50 years. And every single thing that has happened has been the same people. Then I call it now the Poison Ivy League, and rightly so, because I am telling you that what has happened is these same people that were responsible for the murder of JFK, and in my estimation, RFK and Martin Luther King and many other people along the way that got in the way of the global governance plan and the endless war for profit plans, they continued along this path, and what they were doing at the same time was they were breeding the next generation out of the Poison Ivy League, and this also includes their sister organizations connected to the Crown. This is why I say they have been working together with the Crown the entire time up to this day, and included with that Poison Ivy League of groomed globalists would also include Oxford and Cambridge and the Imperial College in their country. And where we are at this point in this whole global governance thing is that then Henry Kissinger and Brzezinski, I'm sure you guys all know them, they worked with David Rockefeller and the billionaire globalist oligarchy to create something that would last through time. And they put it into a lot of writing many, many times. But mainly, in 1971, they created something called the World Economic Forum. This World Economic Forum, you've been lied to, really came out of Harvard. And Henry Kissinger recruited a Nazi son, Klaus Schwab, to put his foothold into Europe so that the global governance crew, I call them the Fourth Reich, and a lot of people call me anti-Semitic, even though I'm a Jew, which is shocking. But the Fourth Reich is exactly what they are, okay? They never gave up, and I say a lot of times, you know, Germany might have lost World War II, but I assure you the Nazis did not. And where we are now is that Klaus Schwab went in and started the build-out of the One World Government. The first conquest was the EU. And what you don't know is that, as I say, I believe every war are the bankers' wars, because who wins every war? Whoever rebuilds that country wins every war, as they will in Ukraine. And I'm sure many of you know that Ukraine already has deals with BlackRock and Vanguard and Chase and the CCP to rebuild their country. They had this deal since 2019, before the war, okay? Because you've been lied to about the war, and most people in here know that. The war started in 2014 when Obama's regime overthrew a duly elected government in Ukraine and made it a money laundering heaven. And they got caught, and getting caught meant that they had to go to war, in my opinion. And that is really what is going on there, unfortunately. Many people are dying, but it is not some kind of Russia went in there just haphazardly to do this. No, they were instigated into that, and Russia made a choice, and we might not like that choice, but that choice could have been avoided, and it wasn't on purpose, because guess what? When they shut the money pit that was Afghanistan, they needed another war. And I'm sorry, but this is what we're dealing with. And at this point, the realization of the American people and people all over the world, because their own internet that was created to track and trace and surveil us, turned on them because of people like Joe Hoff and Ann Vanderspiel and other people out there. But what we really, really need need to realize is that we are fully infiltrated in America. I hate to say this because it is so, and it'll come up. The reason I'm going first is I'm telling you what I believe is going on, because we need to know and we need our friends to know, because like she said, there is no left and right. There is no Republican and Democrat right now. We have a uniparty that is fully captured and controlled. They have no power. These elected officials have no power. The people that have the power are called the Global Public-Private Partnership. They do not hide this. They are very organized. I call them, my friend Charlie Robinson wrote a great book called The Octopus of Global Control. And he lays out all the tentacles. And this is a long game plan. And it came out of, you know, a lot of these institutions, but also from the Rockefeller Institute and the Ford Foundation and the MacArthur Foundation and all of these foundations, the Open Society, the NGOs that all sound like great people, and then their front men like the ACLU and Southern Poverty Law Center and ADL that protect them. And if you attack any of these globalist institutions, they're going to take you down. And nobody's asking why. Nobody's asking what really happened to this country. Well, what happened is that the multinational corporations that we think are American companies sold us out a long time ago. The original treason against America was shipping all of our industry, all of our manufacturing, and what built this country and made this country the best thing in the world overseas.
And that's Mel setting up what I had to come in behind and present a solution to. So here we go. I'm going to give you a little clippet of what I discussed last night, and then we'll finish with solutions. So looking at the world globally through Mel Kay's eyes, you understand the context. You understand the context of what we're up against. I mean, if you look at what I've just come back from down on the border, for the last month I was down with Michael Young, who's the Green Beret war correspondent, logged wartime behind enemy lines with a camera and reporting, you'll understand that when you go down on the Texas border under what we've flagged Operation Burning Edge, because our flag is on fire, our nation is on fire, and you understand that our government, Joe Biden, the resident at 1600 Pennsylvania, signed the Declaration of North America in January 10th of this year. And that Declaration of North America is to, and he signed it along with Trudeau, and with Obrador, thank you. I say Lopez, Obrador. When you understand the three presidents signed that Declaration of North America, what does that mean? It means they have dissolved the borders between Canada, the United States, and Mexico. They're homogenizing all of us. They're going to destroy culture, which is what they're after under the New World Order. They want us all to be the same because they don't care about us. It's about what Mel talked about. It's about enslaving humanity. But it's about moving migration up and down through North America and making us the catch-all and the funders for everybody. Because that is what we've been. The International Banking Cartel, the Federal Reserve, which was started in the dead of night, unconstitutionally so. We're supposed to have the U.S. Treasury. That is our banking system, not some international banking cabal. And again, to the public-private partnership aspect of it, it has taken over, infiltrated all the way down to the municipal level. What we saw eyes on in Texas was really rather startling. In McAllen, Texas, which is a fairly modern city, still has a lot of agriculture. We met with some of the largest farmers there that have over 4,000 acres that feed the world, but they feed all over the United States. They feed grocery stores right in here. They're up against their own city mayor and their own governor and their county commissions that want to pave over agriculture. Why? Because the tax receipts are more for retail and commercial space than they are for ag land. And what is happening? They're widening the bridge, the international bridge in McAllen, Texas, to go right into Mexico, because they're buying land in Mexico and they're growing the produce there and they're importing it into the United States. So again, to Mel's point, no longer is it made in America. Is it grown in America? Is it even done by American hands? They're offshoring everything. And Governor Abbott, who came down to McAllen when I was passing through, and we ended up staying longer because we got a federal whistleblower on child trafficking. I'll talk about that in a second. The mayor of McAllen, Texas, was bragging about tax receipts. And so was the governor of Texas, Governor Abbott, a World Economic Forum puppet. Look him up. He's on their website. Governor Abbott is on their website bragging about the business is booming in McAllen. But meanwhile, 1 mile from where we were sitting, 1 mile, you had broad daylight, people coming across the border. Coming across the border, they are more excited about getting rid of and paving over the agriculture and building McAllen up to be a city than they are about feeding this nation, taking care of their own people. They want to offshore it. Now, when I talk about human trafficking side, again, this is about the destruction of America. You have to, if you can't win at the polls, right, if they can't win at the polls, they can certainly change the face of the electorate. Well, what better way to do it than to have government funded? Now, mind you, the Health and Human Service budget is $2.9 trillion. $2.9 trillion is Health and Human Services budget. They are taking a significant portion of that money and they are running it through large non-governmental organizations that are funding not only the human trafficking and holding these children and adults in these warehouses, but they're also funding the cartels and they're paying the lobbyists, that corporate public private profit, that is then of course influencing members of Congress and Senate to create the policies and laws which allow for this massive human migration, to the point that Joe Biden put it in paper, Declaration of North America. So again, you have to change the face of the electorate, and that's the reason we see this massive open border influx. It's about bringing in people that are going to be on the government dole. Now, how does this grab you? How many of you collect Social Security in here? Okay, you paid into it. Good for you if you're collecting it.
Now it's taxed.
On average, the average American is getting about $1,400 a month in Social Security. The illegal migrants that are coming in are getting checks for $2,200 a month. $2,200 a month. How does that make you feel? It's criminal what they're doing. It's 100%, it's criminal what they're doing. So when you start to look at the fact that you have non-governmental organizations like Catholic Charities that is standing guard on federal land and calling the police on us because we're down there filming what they're doing. Okay, Catholic Charities, they're not the police, they're not the sheriff, they're not even Texas Border Patrol. They're down there defending their turf because they have merchandise coming in. They have military age men with small little children in the cover of darkness at 3 a.m. We did a bunch of operations that would start at about 11, 12 o'clock at night, go to 6, 7 in the morning, and we track these people smuggling in these children with Catholic Charities, calling the cops on us because we were filming what they were doing. And what's even more upsetting about all this is that Customs and Border Protection, well, I have talked to so many of them. They are so sick about Joe Biden. They're so sick about the policies of our government. They're sick about Mayorkas. They're sick about all of it, the Secretary of Department of Homeland Security and Health and Human Services. They're sick about all of it. They are powerless because it's their jobs. It's their paycheck. Well, they could quit. They could try and get another job. But guess what? Some of these guys have been there 20 years, and they're 5 years out from full retirement, and they don't want to quit. They don't want to lose the income. I don't honestly blame them, but what is so disturbing to me is that they show up day after day to flow these people in and funnel them into these non-governmental organizations that are housing in Walmarts that have been converted into warehouses that we saw. We went to physically saw. They are roped off. They have guard gates. And the minute you pull out a video camera and start filming and reporting on this stuff, boy, all the bat signals go off and everybody's swarming you and they're asking you questions why you're here, what you're doing. Well, we're on public property. I'm asking what's going on under that roof. 5,000 children in Brownsville, Texas is under that roof. Fort Bliss in El Paso, Texas has a huge child warehouse where kids are coming in across the border. Why are there so many children coming across the border? Is it because their parents are selling them? Yes, some of them that's happening. But these kids are being lured away by the coyotes and the cartels. They're being funded. And yes, some of the parents do sell them. But a lot of the parents that are coming across because they're being told are also being murdered out in the desert. We spoke with another gentleman who is a Texas agriculture. He was on the Texas Agricultural Commission. He was their number one veterinarian in Texas, Dr. Michael Vickers. And you know what he told us? Not only did he show us one horrible, grueling picture after another, the most vile thing I've ever seen of dead people all over his ranch, but he talked about all the migrants that are bringing in multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis. Tuberculosis is on the rise right now, and it's coming in. This disease will transfer from you to an animal and from an animal back to you. Texas cattle at risk, an $18 billion a year industry at risk of losing its tuberculosis-free status right now because cattle is being slaughtered by tens of thousands. I have a beef sponsor, Lights Out Beef. Great guys. They're out of Waco, Texas. These guys are telling me and beef is going to go up by 30% in October.
Absolutely.
And if you start to look at the futures prices, my husband's in the commodities business. You look at futures prices, you can already see. I mean, we go to the grocery store, we see what's going on. So this is all, again, by design for them to completely and systematically destroy our country, bit by bit. The human trafficking story, I could talk to you for 2 days about that, but I can tell you there are massive, huge non-governmental organizations with hundreds of warehouses stocking tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of children, in fact, all over this country. I'm sitting on a list of 8,600 children right now that is from one facility in a four-month period that these kids were not only taken out of the warehouse, but they were farmed out into neighborhoods all over the country. Every single state has them. And if you look at this list and you go to look at some of these addresses, which we did, you will see there's 109 kids in an apartment. How does that work? Well, guess what? Some of these kids are gang members, and some of these kids have been then relocated, and a lot of these kids are being pimped out for sex trafficking, and that is happening in every neighborhood across this country. It's totally demonic and sick. But again, you look at the cabinet of Joe Biden, we did FOIAs. We did Freedom of Information Act requests on every single member of the Joe Biden regime. Do you know that when you become a public servant, you're supposed to swear an oath to the Constitution, right?
Yes.
You put your hand on the Bible and you raise your right hand and you swear or affirm to defend? Well, there's also, that's called 5 U.S.C. 3331. There's also 5 U.S.C. 3332. That is the written sworn statement or affirmation of the same paragraph that you read and swear and affirm to. It must be notarized. In those FOIAs, we learned that every single one of members of the Biden regime, including Kamala Harris, has some sort of deficiency on their signed, sworn, notarized affidavit.
Secretary of the Army.
That's right.
There you go.
That's right.
We've looked exactly, all of them, every single member of the Biden cabinet. We started doing FOIAs on all of the members of the judiciary and the federal judiciary to see what is going on. Why do these people, we submitted a writ of quo warranto to say by what authority are these people even representing us, because they're all frauds. So you see, when you have public-private partnerships and you have corporations, Washington, D.C. being incorporated, City of London was incorporated, Vatican is its own private city. When you start to look at all the different public-private partnerships running everything, the banking cartel, all of it, you realize we the people aren't running anything. We're not running anything. We're running in circles, and we're shooting at each other because we're so frustrated. There is a solution, and it is a We the People solution.
SAT123.com. They have put together a really incredible package: emergency backup communication systems, power systems. We've got sat phones, we've got solar panels, and also the big 400 watt solar panel behind us there. And why does this matter? Because, of course, right now we are dealing with massive risk of blackouts, and the power grid is just failing, you know, intermittently, but it's going to get worse because we've also got energy shortages. Think about the lack of coal power, the diesel problems that are
Bridie on Radio and BridieOnRadio.com.
This is an amazing company that has sponsored both of us, and this is a way to have backup communications when the grid goes down.
Well, the situation became problematic, Mike, with the New Orleans, the latest hurricane, because people panic. And this is one thing that I've learned from being associated with the satellite phone store for over a decade. People will call and order 600 phones at a time.
What?
It's like this, Mike. Anytime there is a crisis, people want these. And ladies and gentlemen, they've created such a good deal for Mike's viewers, my viewers, our combined viewers, that this is the only way you're going to be able to communicate.
And that's the other beauty about these phones, is they can't track you because it's not talking to a cell tower. It's talking to satellites, you know, orbiting over the equator. So SAT123.com, folks.
The U.S. prepares to bolster troops in Eastern Europe, and tensions build with Russia.
Secretary Austin has placed a range of units in the United States on a heightened preparedness to deploy, which increases our readiness to provide forces if NATO should activate the NRF or if other situations develop.
We have been consulting with allies in deployments and refining plans for all scenarios. We've always said we would reinforce our allies on the eastern flank.
Stay up to date on Bridie on Radio.
Treasure Island coins and precious metals,
Mike Adams of naturalnews.com says 2020 has shown us that we must prepare for the unexpected. Gold and silver will be indispensable to your fiscal well-being during the coming financial pandemic. Shipments are delivered safely, discreetly, and securely right to your door. A precious metals IRA allows you to protect your retirement savings with the ultimate safe haven, assets of gold and silver. Gold and silver will be indispensable to your financial well-being. Your metals are held in the form of real coins and bars in an actual depository under your name and on your behalf. Simply visit BrighteonMetals.com today. Gold and silver will be indispensable to your financial well-being. Shouldn't you at least look into it? Treasure Island coins and precious metals. We're here to help. Visit BrighteonMetals.com today.
Take a stand against biased talk radio.
I'm going to take a strong stand against it.
And listen to Brighty on Radio, where we give you both sides of the story.
Thanks for your support of this platform. Use the code BTV at checkout for additional savings. BrightyOnStore.com.
Brighty on Radio and BrightyOnRadio.com.
Attorney Ryan, it is a pleasure to finally have you sitting next to me in a box across the internet on the show tonight. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Ann. It's an honor to be here.
Well, the honor is truly mine, and it's funny, as I said, I was looking through emails, and I realized we never did connect on Steel Truth for some strange reason. We'll never probably know the true outcome of why that happened. But, hey, here we are now, and you have been fighting a lot of battles. You've done a lot of great work in the school system on behalf of children everywhere, civil rights. But I want to talk to you right now about the Kari Lake debacle in Arizona, because, frankly, Kari Lake really is elected as the governor. And I've always questioned why she just doesn't stand up and assume the mantle of governor of the du jour free state of Arizona versus this corporate entity that Katie Hobbs is running right now.
That's a great question. You know what? She could have been in the governor's office quite a long time ago, but for the actions of the people on her team. She's basically, in my view, been sabotaged from day one as with respect to her legal challenge for the governor's office here in Arizona. It started out with her attorneys missing key case law in their filing, their complaint. They missed a case called Reyes v. Cumming, which is a case out of Yuma County from 1997 that was not available on LexisNexis. It actually had the substantive part of the opinion removed from the research database. It just said reversed and remanded with instructions. I found the case on another research database called FastCase. And what the case holds is that when you violate Arizona's signature verification statute, that is ARS 16550A, by failing to conduct a proper signature comparison, you actually violate the constitutional protections within Arizona's constitution that ensure that we have a free and fair election. And so these are non-technical statutes that require setting aside the election as a matter of law when they are violated. And unfortunately, Brian Blem and Kurt Olson completely missed the mark on that. I ended up suing her judge as a pro se litigant in the Arizona Supreme Court back in January, arguing that the judge should be compelled to rescind his order and actually rule in favor of Kari Lake, because we knew that signature verification in Arizona was not done properly. They were comparing mail-in ballot affidavits, that those are the signatures that you sign on the outside of the envelope before you put your ballot inside the envelope and send it in, to illegitimate criteria. They were actually comparing them to hundreds of thousands of prior mail-in affidavit signatures that were scanned by Runbeck and included into what they defined as the registration record. And that's not consistent with Arizona law. You actually have to make a specific comparison, and that is the problem with Kari Lake's case.
Okay, so let's bring up the case that actually, that you filed this, that, you know, represents this filing with respect to the signature verification, because I have a ton of questions on this masked Crosby complaint that really, you know, takes a stab at explaining where the signatures should be verified against what records. So let's start there. What are the original signatures that people should be verifying any future signatures for voting? What records should they be comparing the original signature on?
Per Arizona law, they should be comparing to what's defined as the registration record. That is the form that you sign when you actually go in and register to vote as an elector here in Arizona.
Could, Could it also be because of motor voter? Could it be your driver's license signature? If you check that box, like in Florida, you can check a box to register to vote, which would capture your signature at the DMV.
It could be a number of signatures. It could come from any time you basically engage in an act that complies with ARS 16, 157, 152, and that defines what is a registration form here in Arizona. So anytime you show an identification, you provide proof of citizenship, you check off all of these statutory requirements, and you provide a signature, you actually can treat that as a county recorder as part of a registration form. What you don't include in the registration record or the registration form are signatures from mail-in affidavit envelopes that you sign and send in when you submit a vote by mail. And what happened in Maricopa County is we had 1.3 million mail-in ballots submitted in the 2022 general election. And in the primary election, there were over 780,000 mail-in ballots submitted. Each of those 780,000 were included in the registration record without the voter ever actually showing an identification or proof of citizenship or any of these other enumerated criteria you actually have to provide when you register to vote. So they were taking signatures that are outside of the scope of what's legal in Arizona and using those to verify votes in Maricopa County. Hundreds of thousands of votes were compared to illegitimate criteria, and all of those votes are illegal, and that's what this lawsuit is about. I filed it just about a week ago here in Maricopa County, and it asked the court to set aside the election and order a new election here in Maricopa County to ensure that our laws that provide a security blanket for our elections, our mail-in elections, are actually followed, and we have a legitimate election here in Arizona.
Okay, so I want to talk again a little bit more drilling down on the signature verification, because this has been such a thorn under the skin of the late campaign, just trying to get this one very important point over the finish line. I mean, frankly, that's fraud, right? That is total mail fraud. There's a lot, I don't even know what all the statutes are that are violating in terms of felonies when you fraudulently pass off a signature. That being said, I am aware that Jovan Hutton-Pulitzer, with whom I have interviewed and discussed numerous times, has technology that can do signature verification very, very rapidly because he uses artificial intelligence, and he can scan the original signatures on the registration forms, as you've just, you know, explained, to the actual mail-ins and see if they're in fact the same. We've all seen that meme of two guys sitting in the Maricopa County office looking at signature verifications on a screen on side-by-side cubicles. One guy is just going by through every single one of them very quickly and accepting them, click, click, click. You can't even see what he's clicking on, where the other guy is really studying the original signature to the mail-in signature. And you can see the difference in, you know, who's really trying to uphold the law, who isn't. Setting that aside, Jovan had the ability to do that quickly and give you a first impression. Why was he unable to apprehend and get the original signatures so that he could compare them against the voting registration record?
Yeah, in my view, there have been a lot of people blocking access to very critical data and access to the courts in general. Jovan seems to have experienced the same problem that I'm experiencing with We the People Arizona Alliance and with Carrie Lake's legal team. In fact, I'm the reason that her case is even alive today. I intervened. What happened is after I sued Judge Thompson in the Supreme Court, I got hired by an individual, David Mast. He hired me. He actually let go of another firm here in Arizona that is part of a state representative's firm, Alexander Collin. He's a very good attorney. He actually represents Abraham Hamadeh. But Dave wanted to hire me instead. And so I actually filed an amicus brief in the Arizona Supreme Court, and I won for Carrie Lake. I'm the reason her case was remanded back down to the trial court for the signature verification issue. And when I tried to intervene in the trial court on behalf of my client again as amicus, her attorneys actually lied to the court and told them we had not contacted her team, told the judge we hadn't contacted her team prior to filing to seek permission. That's not true. I have text messages proving the opposite. And frankly, right after that, I was started to be called a Fed by these ridiculous people. Brian Blem in particular was going around on Twitter while he was holding himself out as Carrie Lake's attorney in his headline, claiming that I am somehow part of the deep state and somehow a Fed. I'm not. I'm a philanthropist. I spend the vast majority of my time giving back to society, actually giving my own time and resources, my own family's money, to help kids get back at woke institutional abuses within the school system. We file cases all over the country, particularly with respect to COVID-19 mask mandates the LGBTQ plus indoctrination of children. Those types of issues are the things that we're actually fighting and giving to with my work at the Gavel Project.
So essentially you are fighting on behalf of the people for free, pro bono in all these cases to, you know, support the constitutional freedoms that are basically protected that God gave us to start with. So it doesn't seem to me that you're really trying to help. And again, going back to the original point, the reason Carrie Lake's case is still alive is because you sued.
Yeah, I filed an amicus brief, which is a friend of the court paper with the actual Supreme Court.
And you're telling me that Carrie Lake's attorneys claim that you did that without their approval or that they did not know and that they are lying about that because you have text messages to prove that?
That's right. We were able to get their consent in the Supreme Court to file. I saved the day there. And then when it went back down to the Superior Court, they objected to the inclusion of the exact argument that actually just won in Yavapai County.
Wait a minute. Carrie Lake's team argued against your being included, this evidence, your methodology?
That's right. They objected to an argument that actually just succeeded in a lawsuit up in Yavapai County on this exact same issue. There was an organization here in Arizona called the Arizona Free Enterprise Club, and they brought a lawsuit at the beginning of this year after the Arizona Supreme Court case was actually remanded, arguing that registration record means exactly what I'm talking about, the form that you sign when you register to vote. It does not include these mail-in affidavit signatures. It doesn't include these precinct rolls that you sign when you show up. And Carrie Lake's attorneys actually, in my view, committed malpractice by objecting to the inclusion of this argument that has been since vindicated by a court here in Arizona.
What has been the response of the Lake team since their case is still alive based on signature verification now?
You know, I haven't really communicated much with them at all since this. I've had them attacking me personally. I've had people from her team sharing the one type of vehicle that my family actually drives on Twitter, telling people and actually putting my family in danger. These are people that are investigators for her team trying to dox my family.
Is Carrie Lake doing this, or is it just people around her and her team?
It's people that work for her directly. Okay. I've never spoken with Carrie. In fact, I have an offer for Carrie right now. She's being censored. She has been censored for quite a long time. And my client would like to pay to hire me on her behalf to sue Katie Hobbs personally for censoring the speech of her and individuals here in Arizona. I'm digging into the public records right now to figure out exactly what happened. And we're happy to go after these folks because they broke the law and they manipulated the election by silencing American citizens.
Yeah. Okay, I want to focus on Brian Blem for a second, because, of course, during the Lake hearings, he was very visible, was making a lot of noise. But there seems to be a potential conflict of interest. He not only represents Carrie Lake as part of her legal team, but he also represents We the People Arizona Alliance, which apparently came into a lot of money from the Maricopa County GOP. Can you enlighten us a little bit?
Yeah, there's quite a lot going on with this individual. I mean, we saw it during the actual trial. Brian Blem had Shelby Bush on the stand, who is part of We the People Arizona Alliance. And one of the attorneys from Maricopa County started questioning Ms. Bush about potential criminal acts that her organization was committing by housing these types of these public records on their servers. And what are you supposed to do as an attorney if you represent Shelby Bush, who's the witness in the case, and the plaintiff, who is also part of the case? You can't do anything. That's a conflict of interest. He should have never had these people come onto the case, and they should have been barred. And frankly, there should be, Carrie should be filing complaints with the state bar against Brian Blem for violating conflict of interest.
Wow, that is pretty heavy. And understanding that it's my understanding that Shelby Bush was in control of the signatures and, again, would not release them to Joe Von Hutton Pulitzer for him just to do a litmus test ostensibly to see if, in fact, the signature verification panned out one way or the other. You could always go back and do the manual review properly, not just putting them in a computer and clicking everything and mm-hmm. saying that it matches, but doing a legitimate review, hiring maybe even an outside third-party group to be the, you know, the unbiased third-party group to do that manual review if nothing else, to support the findings of Joe Von Hutton Pulitzer, which may support Katie Hobbs and may support Carrie Lake. But let's try and get to the bottom of it. It seems that nobody ever wants to get to the bottom of anything. You know, does that sort of seem like what you're up against at this point?
Yeah, I also think that there's quite a lot of waste going on. You know, Jovan, I believe, has a right to look at the signatures. But as a matter of law here in Arizona, it doesn't matter whether or not these signatures match. And in fact, at the end of the day, you cannot tie the ballots that are actually removed from the envelopes to the signatures, because once they're removed, we have a secret ballot in Arizona. And right. So Carrie Lake right now is actually filing a lawsuit. She's seeking to inspect the signatures from Maricopa County on these mail-in affidavit envelopes. I filed an Amici brief in that case very recently on behalf of Mr. Mast. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter whether or not they get their hands on these signatures, because they're not going to be able to go back and do the job that is prescribed to the county recorder, which is signature verification. That is actually a constitutional issue. They delegated that authority, the legislature, to the county recorder to conduct signature verification. And whether or not any given signature matches is not something a court can even question at this point. So they're wasting a bunch of time, they're wasting a bunch of resources, and they're trying to actually get to these documents that aren't going to make a difference in the case.
Do you expect to hear from Carrie Lace now that this that her case for signature verification is still alive, thanks to your amicus brief that has been filed?
You know, I'm not sure if I will, but either way, I'm going to keep fighting. We filed this lawsuit on behalf of Tom Crosby, who is a supervisor for the Cochise County Board of Supervisors, in his individual capacity as a citizen who was deprived of his right to vote due to the fact that Maricopa County illegitimately included hundreds of thousands of mail-in ballots in their canvas without actually going through the proper signature verification process. And so we're going to fight this irrespective of what Carrie Lake does.
Okay, I want to sort of pivot a little bit here. Recently, Liz Harris, who had been elected as a first-time state house representative to LD 13 in Arizona, was just expelled from the Arizona State House. This followed a joint committee hearing between the AZ Senate and the AZ House, where Liz Harris brought in investigator Jacqueline Brieger, who presented a damning amount of evidence of cartel money laundering going through not only Arizona but 22 other states, that was basically bribing politicians from Arizona across the country by laundering money through mortgages. In other words, buy a house, get your mortgage paid off, take out another loan against your house, get it paid off, and the money was just getting laundered through down to the politicians. After she was, after this was brought up, within 3 weeks, apparently, Arizona state legislators passed a bill immediately, within 3 weeks, to prohibit the public from being able to see and gaining access to mortgages and property ownership of the Arizona state legislators. How does that strike you?
I think it's interesting. I don't know the attorney. I think his name is Thelmer or something like that. That was
Thaler, John Thaler.
That was in the background, that was actually providing the information to Jacqueline to bring to the Senate. In my view, I don't trust him because this type of evidence, if he actually is what he claims to be, which is a racketeering attorney, and that's actually part of the testimony that was provided. Jacqueline talked about how he's a RICO attorney. This type of evidence is very easily brought into a federal court on RICO charges. The thing is that when you're speaking in the legislature, when you're speaking in the U.S. legislature as well, you're protected. Your statements are protected from defamation. And so I don't believe it unless he actually brings forth the lawsuit to charge these people who are specifically, you know, allegedly taking out these types of mortgages for their own benefit. It's something that strikes me as implausible.
So why would the Arizona legislators then pass the law that protects their property right ownership from public view?
Well, in my view, I mean, I'm someone who's a very public person. I have people looking into my background pretty extensively, unfortunately. And it's scary to have your address out there. It's scary to have people know where you live, especially when you have a family like I do with two little kids. So I believe that there is some legitimate reason for that type of legislation. But, I mean, if he has the evidence, he should just file the lawsuit and actually litigate the issue.
Yeah, my understanding is I don't know why he hasn't filed that lawsuit, because I think that's an excellent question. He did present it to Doug Ducey and the attorney general at the time when Ducey was still governor, and it went nowhere. So they brought it to the people, assuming that the people would want to do something to look into it. And instead, it was, I think she was, well, at least Liz Harris was fairly excoriated for it. And I think the Arizona state legislator claimed that she was, you know, a massive distraction to what they were trying to achieve. But you look at that in comparison to what you're talking about and the fact that we couldn't get signature verification over the finish line. And yet you came in with an amicus brief and saved the case and kept it alive is pretty interesting. So that seems there's a lot of distractions going on and we never get the ball into the end zone, which is frustrating because we're sitting here watching our country be destroyed and we could remove those electors if we had a Senate and a House with some, you know, cojones, essentially. All right. I want to talk a little bit about your work and the school boards and what you've done. So I'm going to let you highlight what do you think are some of your most important cases outside the Kerry Lake situation.
Yeah, so at the Gavel Project, we fund lawsuits all across the country on behalf of kids who have been injured by woke abuses. And some of the cases that we've actually filed in the last few months, and by the way, these are very expensive. We hire attorneys in other states. I'm not licensed in California. We have multiple lawsuits in California. For example, one case is against Saddleback Valley Unified School District, where during COVID-19, in the beginning of beginning of 2022, this school stuck elementary age students, these are fourth and fifth graders, in a cage, an outdoor enclosure for 4 weeks because they refused to mask. They weren't allowed to go to recess. They weren't allowed to go to lunch. They weren't allowed to talk to their friends. They were told they were being punished and displayed like zoo animals in front of their friends every day in a communist-style struggle session and actually were unable to leave the desks that they were told to sit at all day. There was no shade. There was no shelter. They were in extreme heat. They were in extreme cold. These kids were literally tortured because they happened to disagree with the narrative, the bogus narrative, by the way, now that we know this, that masks worked. It's nonsense. And we have other cases as well. We have a case against ABC Unified School District in South Los Angeles, where a young girl was put inside a closet because she refused to mask, covered with literally tarps around her as if though that was going to do anything to prevent the spread of COVID-19. We have a case in Coronado Unified School District down in San Diego where a young girl was stuck outside for 6 weeks for refusing to mask. These cases are really important. They are free speech cases and they are precedent setting. It'll make it so that these types of behaviors by school officials, these abusive behaviors, do not happen again. And we do need your support. And I will say the only way I'm able to do this election work is because people out there are so kind and so generous. They give to the Gavel Project and support our litigation fund. I'm a much better attorney than I am a fundraiser. And it has been very difficult to raise funds to pay these attorneys to actually get the ball across the line. But that's what we're doing. And thanks to all the folks out there that give. If you want to support us with a tax-deductible donation, we are a 501c3 nonprofit. You can go to thegavelproject.com.
Awesome. Ryan Heath, I think you're fantastic, and I love your energy. You're incredibly intelligent, well-spoken young man, and you're doing godly work. So to that, I'm very grateful. Thank you so much for joining me this evening here.
All right. Thanks, Ann.
All right. All right, everybody. That's a wrap for tonight. Don't forget your tacticalcivics.com. This is another way that we the people can come together and support each other in our local communities. Again, last night, Liberty Defenders, I know we got some new signups for tacticalcivics.com out of the Liberty Defenders here in Martin County. And yours truly is going to take a bigger role in this because I'm putting my money where my mouth is. It's $5 to join, and that's it. You're a lifetime member. All right, everybody, have a good night. Tomorrow we have Josh Yoder. We have a breaking news update on his case, U.S. Freedom Flyers and Health Freedom Defense Fund, and it is juicy. I'll just leave you with that. I'm on my way to Panama tomorrow, so keep me in your prayers, and I will check back in with you again after tomorrow night's show. Good night, everybody.